that's loose to the human spirit.
We are fighting down the bottom with a bottom group of players.
That's an extremely naive statement.
I didn't know any of that. The arm sock tube's far too big for me.
Boarding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. Talking the rabbits and turning heads. With questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home. Thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Colorado Rapids fans. This is Holding the High Line with Rabbi in Red. We are brought to you by Icarus FC and Roughneck Scarves. My name is Matt Pollard. It is Monday, June 21st, 2021. Happy belated Juneteenth, which we will now be getting off next year. Go ahead and Google Gordon Granger and General Order 3 from the state of Texas if you haven't already and read up on that. Scotland has defeated England by a score of 0-0 in the UEFA Euros. Hungary are displaying their right-wing tendencies on the pitch and in the stadium. And the Finnish national team has embraced the Finland concept of sisu, which they say crudely translates to collective guts, inner strength, or resilience. So as far as HTHL is concerned, sisu is Finnish for keep fighting. I'm joined now by a man who's seen the Rapids win in person more recently than you have, Rabbi Jopstam.
What? That's fantastic. I love that. I am not, having met Jopstam in the first, in the flesh, I cannot say that I am as bald, as beautiful as that man. I mean, it's one thing to shave your head to get that, you know, fully proper bald look. It's another thing to, like, use straight up legit turtle wax, and to spend, hours each night polishing the dome so that it gets the perfect, like, Destro style reflective chrome kind of shine that Jopstam gets, or Jopstam makes. I found out how they pronounce it there, and it's, you know, you can either pronounce it the American way, which is to overpronounce each of the syllables, Jopstam, or you can say, you can try and be Dutch and say Jopstam, and then it's tricky. But anyways, how are you, Matt?
I'm doing okay. You know, pretty easy Monday. Obviously fun weekend with the way that MLS ended up working out. And, you know, Mark, we've got our first really busy weekend that we have going on. So listeners, by the time you're listening to this, it's probably going to be sometime middle of the day Tuesday. And then it's going to be what, like 30-ish hours away from the Rapids kicking off against Sporting Kansas City. So, I mean, we have a game on Tuesday, Mark. We have a full slate of Wednesday midweek action. Then we have a game on Thursday, a game on Friday, and then your standard Saturday, Sunday busyness. So this is in a normal pre-pandemic year, no fixture congestion because of the way that the season worked and having to take breaks through international windows. If I looked at the calendar and saw there were this many games on the certain number of days and everything, I would have thought this is the first week of MLS teams in Open Cup. So unfortunate that we're not getting Magic of the Cup here, Mark, but hopefully we'll be getting Magic of the Rapids returning to Children's Mercy Park. But, you know, I'm in an upbeat mood overall. I hiked Mount Morrison the other day, and there was a concert that was taking place down the hill at Red Rocks, and I guess they were doing, like, the sound check, and they had, I guess there was some opening band act or whatever, and it was like a little modern punk rocky with the occasional metal song. Surprisingly, Mark, metal's a really, really good song to listen to while you're bouldering uphill. So that got me through the rest of the day. So ramping up, hopefully going to do Quandary in July, and then we'll see whether or not Long's Peak happens and when that happens, given how busy I'm going to be with Rapid stuff on the weekends.
I didn't know Aaron Long had a mountain named after him. You would think that you'd have to accomplish more to get one of the 14ers named after you, but maybe, you know, if he continues to kick butt and take names, we'll have to rename it, you know, Mount Yarborough, or perhaps Mount Price. I mean, any one of those might be a suitable alternative to Mount Aaron Long. Although, you know, like, Mount Pulisic seems like an equally possible opportunity, or maybe Mount McKinney. You know, I don't know. I actually can't name all of the 14ers in Colorado, so.
I mean, there's like 53 of them, Mark, so I can name the usual ones that everybody thinks of, but there's probably a bunch. You know, there's one in that cluster that you have down in Buena Vista that I probably can't remember as part of like the collegiate peaks. But I think if we're going full Rapids here, or like American soccer and everything, Mark, the notion that we do not have a Mount Mastroeni standing right next to a Mount Lorenowitz is borderline. We need to, who decides the names of these things? We need to go find out that organization or those people and talk to them. Or I guess we got to invent time travel and go back in time when the original adventurers moving west past the Louisiana Purchase got into Colorado and started naming things and, you know, dropped them a couple names from them. But I guess
I was gonna say that, like, there's a lot of names that sound like they were named after dead white men, Matt, and based on American history and the fact that, like, I don't know about you, but I'm pretty sure Colorado didn't originate with some of those people. We shouldn't get too hung up on some of those names, because we could assume that some original names may go back. I mean, I had a friend, you know, speaking of impressive peaks that were climbed, when I was a kid, I knew it as Mount McKinley, but nobody calls it Mount McKinley anymore. It's now called Denali, because that was the native name that was given to it, which is a cooler name anyways, you know. And also, President McKinley was a terrible president, so who knows why it got named after that. What I'm saying is, I think it's possible that it might be Mount Mastroeni by the end of the 2030s. You know, I think if things keep going the way they're going for the Rapids, though, I think Mount Fraser is not out of the question. The season is going really well, so naming mountains after our current manager seems like a legitimate possibility.
So we mentioned that, Mark. This is normally like a fun question that I like to ask, like, people that I have with friends, or it's a really, really great, like, first date question of the, Mark, if we have access to a time machine, what are the, I have to imagine we've got a date with somebody in southern Bavaria, Germany in the 1930s. To deal with that situation if we have access to a time machine. But if we had to agree, we've got a time machine and we can go back in time and see one soccer thing, what are we going to see?
So actually, I'll just tell you, because I was just randomly, this is a good random semi-related story that I would have never told had you not asked that question. But I didn't get a soccer photojournalist pass. Because MLS has a rule that they currently have, which I imagine they've got to change by the end of a couple weeks from now, which says that if you want a photo credential for a match, you need to get a nasal swab 36 hours before the game at the home stadium. So I had to be at TQL Stadium at 7 o'clock in the morning on Friday, but I wasn't there. I didn't get to Cincinnati until I got to Columbus basically Friday night, and I got to Cincinnati Saturday. So I shot some photography from the first row in the, like, the aisle. And while I was standing there, I was shooting some photos. I got to talking to a bloke wearing an England jersey, and he just turned to me and we started to chat. And he said before the game, like, yeah, you know, I went with my dad in 1966 to the England World Cup, and I was there for the final, and we were praying and holding on the whole time. I was 12 years old, and I was like, that is a great story. So I don't know that I can tell you what my answer would be for a time machine, although I think it was like, what, the 1932 or 38 final that was Uruguay?
Whenever the U.S. finished in third, and we don't talk about that enough or brag about it enough.
Well, we finished third in 1950, right?
Was it?
I think Uruguay won in like 1932 or something like that. I want to be there. I just want to see that. I think was that the first World Cup? We'll Google while you're talking, but like, I think being there for Uruguay, who's never going to win the World Cup final again, I think that would be super cool. Matt, what's your answer to that question?
I think if we had to pick something specifically Rapids related, Mark, I think it of course has to be the 2010 World Cup, the 2010 MLS Cup final, of which neither of us were physically in attendance for. And off of our previous experience, Mark, with Snow Classicos and being in the press box and outside for the big chill at DSG Park, where the beer taps froze over in the CCL game against Toronto, I think we'd be prepared from a thick skin and a proper gear standpoint to stand out there in the cold for 120 minutes. Plus, for the MLS Cup. I think if I had to pick any game that ever occurred in MLS, you know, I think the usual typical ones that you have, the crazy Cali Classico with David Beckham fighting Q, the San Jose Earthquakes mascot at Stanford Stadium, would have been a fun one to go to. The similar, the Rafa Marquez punching David Beckham, Jose Altidore winner at a sold-out Red Bull Arena would have been a really, really good one. I think the Rapids, you know, home opener, Marcelo Balboa getting the first goal in club history would have been a good one. I personally,
oh my God.
I would have said, I say this obviously as a Los Angeles native, Mark, but the U.S. Men's National Team 1994 at the Rose Bowl for Colombia, given all the little micro things that happened in that game that ultimately affected a lot of people. The center back for Colombia, Escobar, who committed the own goal most significantly of all, that would have been something from a historical perspective. But your points on greater USMNT history are well taken.
My second game ever, professional game ever, not professional. My second game ever on U.S. soil was at the 1994 World Cup, but I got to see Cameroon versus Sweden, which was, I think, a 1-1 draw. When I was, 17 years old. Yeah, that was a good one. My first game ever was in 1987. I saw the Major Indoor Soccer League, when I was in, like, I think fifth grade. I saw, the Los Angeles Lasers, who had the most amazing logo ever, and that I would absolutely want it. I was close, Matt. It was the first World Cup in history. It was Uruguay in 1930, and then, bit of minutiae. Uruguay refused to enter in 1934 and 1938 because the Europeans didn't travel. And then the next time they played in the World Cup was in 1950 after World War II, and they won that one too. So I think either one of those. You were right, Maddie, about 1950. Good job.
Mark, how have we been friends for like 6 years, and how have we been doing this podcast for four, and this is the first time that I'm hearing that you went to a World Cup game in 1994. But in any case...
Oh my God, wait, let me tell the story real quickly, and I'll throw this... I won't tell the whole story, because I'm just going to grab the thing if I can find it, but not only that, but at my high school... So it was Cameroon versus Sweden. I had a high school, like, going away party with a bunch of kids that I grew up with as I was a little kid, and we went away to this little funny hotel resort thing up in Oxnard, a couple weeks after high school ended. And as I was there, there were all these, Africans in the eating area, and I walked up to them and I said, "Excuse me, you know, are you guys playing in the World Cup?" And they said, "Yes, we are." I said, "Who are you?" And they said, "We're the Cameroon national team." I said, "Oh my God, I have tickets to see you in..." No, it must have been... I take it back. I said, "Oh my God, I saw you guys play last week. I have my program here. Will you sign it?" And they said, "Sure." And I brought it up to them, and I said, "You know, which one of you wants to sign it?" And I brought it to a man, and I said, "He said, I'll sign it." And I said, "Great, what's your name?" And he said, "Roger Mila." Roger Mila is, if you Google it, people, at the previous World Cup in 1990, he was the leading scorer at the 1990 World Cup. I think he scored eight goals or six goals in the 1930. I have a... I'll take a picture of it and post it on the interwebs. But yeah, it was... totally random that I just also happened. I went to a game, and not a week earlier, not a week later, I met the entire team by accident at a resort in Oxnard, California.
All right, moving on to a real banter topic. Mark, you have, in the history of this podcast, been a very good traveler of stadia. You've been to Children's Mercy Park for a game. We have spoken in the past about you gallivanting around Southern California and seeing the Bank of California Stadium for the first time. First time ever capacity crowd, third ever home game at TQL Stadium. Your thoughts on the layout, the architecture, everything, as Mark is showing me the program, and it looks like Iron Man trying a bicycle kick. That's what it looks like. I don't think it's intended to be Iron Man, but in any case, Mark, you need to tweet that out, and we'll definitely retweet that from HDHL. In any case, Rabbi, your thoughts on the newest stadium in, or excuse me, the second newest stadium in Major League Soccer?
Yeah, it was gorgeous. It was a great experience. I mean, I can't tell you too much about, you know, the stadium and its architecture. I think people kept bragging about how it looked when it was lit up, and you could see it really from the inside. There were a couple things that were really special about it. I think thing one is, I think for Rapids fans who our supporters section, you know, has dwindled in recent years, and we're not getting the same kind of volume and noise. Like, I've only been in two soccer stadiums where the fans were louder. And the first was Seattle for a playoff game in 2016. And the second was, Bank of California, and it's hearing the 3252, in their first and second season. They were absolutely thunderous, but, shout out to the Bailey, the supporter section at TQL. They were absolutely thunderous, and they didn't really get slowed down after that first goal. They really kind of kept bringing it. It was really impressive. They put on a great show. If you check my Twitter feed, you can also see some of the pictures of when they spark smoke at the beginning. I think the other thing that's notable, which is, it's funny, I'm talking about everything but the stadium, Matthew, but not really everything but, just like everything around the stadium is really what's impressive. We got to the game really, to the area around the stadium very early. They have a classic kind of downtown stadium, which they built in an area of downtown, which according to one of the supporters that I spoke with one of their primary supporters of the six supporters groups that make up the Bailey, Die Innerstadt, I think is the name of it or something like that. I have to Google it again. My brain isn't working fully. I have to use Google to supplement everything tonight. But really nice, a really nice bunch of supporters. They pointed out that, like, this was that classic downtown revitalization kind of effort that's going on. One of the guys was saying, like, you know, if you had been here just 10 years ago, nobody would be walking around here, and this part of downtown would have been abandoned and dangerous. Like, you would have been afraid to walk through it. They built a stadium there. They revitalized some old, warehouse buildings that were like brick and from the like early 1900s. They built a whole bunch of really cool bars. And downtown was just absolutely like bespeckled? No, bespannered? Bannered? I'm not sure of the word I'm looking for here. It was just covered in blue and orange, and everywhere you went, there were just FCC fans hanging out of every bar, like hundreds of them. And so one of our intrepid away fans, C38 Capo Juan Warners FC on Twitter, and a fellow friend of the podcast, a guy we really like, he literally scheduled himself his own bar crawl. We started at one pub at 4 o'clock, and then or at 2 o'clock, and then moved to another at four, and then another at five. And I'd only gotten in, you know, at like 3 o'clock, so I only joined him for one of those pubs before I headed off the stadium to pick up my media credential. But I had an absolutely great time. You know, I met one of the supporters there. Supporters groups is the holder of the wooden spoon. So I got to meet and take a picture with the wooden spoon in person, which was a lifetime thrill for me. You know, like just absolutely, you know, I got to, and then I got to the stadium, and I got my press pass, and I kind of wandered around. The press box is a little bit smaller than I had hoped. They haven't quite furnished it up properly. And Matt, you'll laugh at this. It reminds me of a couple years ago when the Rapids lost their entire media and comms team in the period of like 12 months. You'll remember the director of communications for the Rapids left for USL. The assistant director or the director of like media liaisoning, he also left, and the Rapids were literally, they had handed us in the media some guy from video to kind of do all the media stuff, and the dude just did not have the time to do it, along with the other 4,000 things he was expected to do. That's what the situation is in Cincinnati right now. They've lost their entire communications department in the last couple weeks. And so the guy who was kind of showing me around the press box was like, I was like, hey, am I going to get halftime stats? And how do I get from up here to the presser at the end of the game? And he looked at me and he goes, honestly, I have no idea. I'm new here. I don't know anything. By the way, the guy was really sweet. He did a great job, but he's not really in communications. Guess what his name is, Matt? Chris Wondolowski. Lovely guy. He's not that Chris Wondolowski, but he did miss the goal in many different ways. But anyways.
Mark, you realize the irony, given the current comms PR media lead for the Colorado Rapids is named Omar Gonzalez, in no way related to Toronto FC and former USMNT defender Omar Gonzalez.
I got to meet Omar for the first time, which is funny. Matt, you've hung out with Omar multiple times, I'm sure, at the stadium, but Omar was on the away trip. I'll say one thing about, and then I'll actually say something about the stadium. I've answered everything except about the stadium, which is the way it is, because the experience wasn't really about the bricks and mortar. You're the engineer, so you're excited about the building. I'm the rabbi, so I'm excited about the people that I met along the way. The true story of TQL Stadium was the friends we made along the way, Matt. But I got to see Omar, and we were chatting for a while, and then Porik Smith sidled up, came by. He remembered me, of course, which was very sweet. We chatted for a while. I mentioned, like, hey, we've got some away fans, isn't that great? And he goes, where? And I pointed, and he goes, oh, great, I'll go over and say hi. And we finished talking, and he walked right over. I got a really nice shot of Porik sitting in the stands with the away fans, which, by the way, is a tradition that he kind of does whenever he goes away. If he knows there are away fans at a game, he'll go and hang out with you. Like, he's a really chill dude that way. I think he went back in and let the team know, these are where your away fans are, just so you know. And after the second goal, the Rapids ran to the corner flag and serenaded Juan, Jared, Justin, and I forget our fourth away fan. So it was all around a great thing. The building itself is quite nice. It's really pretty from the outside. From the inside, it's basically like going to SKC, but just a little bit more built up, in the sense that, like, it just feels a little bit bigger. I think SKC probably seats about 22,000. This one sat 27. And they had it for the first time ever at 100% capacity, and it was a sold-out game, which was the largest game they've ever had in their history for obvious reasons, which is COVID protocol. So the atmosphere was great. The last thing I'll say about it was, one of the cute things about the experience was, every supporter I talked to at the bar and during the game, and the media that I met in the press box who covered the team, the guys from Cincy Soccer Talk, the guys from the local, the men and women from the local paper, they were all very friendly and very polite and very excited about the crowd, but they were all extremely dour about the fact that the team is not good and they can't seem to get it together. And there was this kind of foreboding sense of ill about what's going on the field, and that, like, they just couldn't get it together. And there was a certain degree of, like, expected catastrophe in the way they played. And we'll get to the game itself, but, like, you know, they really missed their chances, every possible opportunity they could miss a chance, and most of the fans seem to pretty much expect it, right? Like, this is the story of the Colorado Rapids in, like, 2017 or 2015 or 2014, when, like, nothing could go right, and we would be up in the press box, and we would look at each other and be like, of course that happened, because we're the Rapids. That's the feeling around Cincinnati right now. Like, they can do no right.
Listeners, this past Saturday at TQL Stadium, the Colorado Rapids climbed, I say, to an elevation of 482 feet above sea level to summit Mount Bailey, defeating FC Cincinnati by a score of 2-0. The Rapids come out in the 3-5-2, 5-3-2 that we saw against LAFC. Mark, Lalo Zubakar again in at center back, and then Diego Rubio, dare I say, as a false nine, maybe even a number 10 mark, with Michael Barrios as the kind of wide number nine outlet role that we have. Just 2 minutes in, we get the first of three outlet balls to Michael Barrios, runs in on goal, and he is absolutely stuffed by Kenneth Vermeer in a very Nick Raimondo-esque mid-level chop to both win the ball, not get a foul, and also take the attacker out of the play. Luciano Costa cuts inside and then finds Brenner, who's able to find a little bit of half space with Lawless out of position, and Danny Wilson a step behind Brenner for a shot, which William Yarbrough was able to make the save, the first of many on the night. And then the Rapids, Mark, kind of maintained and established their defensive posture all the way through until the 21st minute, where they were hitting opportunities on the counter, and finally the third outlet ball to Michael Barrios is the charm. Barrios gets in behind the FC Cincinnati defense, almost stutters or waits, expecting the flag to go up. The flag does not go up, but Barrios is able to round Kenneth Vermeer after the third time of trying, and then lays the ball off to a late arriving Diego Rubio, who slots it in for the goal. Things get really, really chippy after that. A yellow card to Kellen Acosta. I was waiting to see, Mark, how early in the second half Baldomero Toledo would turn this into a Toledo game. The answer to the question, he turned it into a Toledo game 30 minutes into the first half here, folks. Viacia goes down in the 30th minute, and then the S. Housery starts to get involved with that. He supposedly had a concussion protocol that was applied there and ultimately was ruled to be okay, though he was subbed off at halftime. VAR did take a look for a possible red card to Danny Wilson for an elbow up, but Wilson was in a better position and cleanly won the header in the air. Not great from the Rapids after their lead and everything, Mark. The center backs, you know, they did a great job absorbing pressure. There was a lot of emergency defending, but it almost set up Robin Fraser was trying to set things up in, you know, we're going to absorb pressure and we're going to trust our center backs to make saves and make plays, and ultimately they ended up doing that. We get into the second half, and Nicholas Benezé and Jonathan Lewis sub on for Diego Rubio and for, I can't remember who else subbed on for that one. I don't have it in my notes. In any case, Mark, play resumes after 10 minutes into the second half. William Yarbrough takes a really rough foul where it looks like he's holding his right knee. The physios are with him for about 2 to 3 minutes. He's testing it out and everything. Play resumes with the free kick, with Danny Wilson taking the free kick. I was kind of wondering what was going on there, but whatever it was, Mark, it must have been a stinger, because almost immediately there's a couple turnovers at midfield and Yarbrough's forced into coming off his line to collect the ball, and it didn't look great, but ultimately he got the job done. 69 minutes in, Barreal on a free kick with a curling ball over the wall, and then looks like it's going inside the near post, and Yarbrough stretches out and ultimately makes the save. 72nd minute, completely against the run of play. Jonathan Lewis slides the ball past Vermeer. Great pass from Price with a perfectly weighted ball as Lewis is making the run to the far post. Instead of taking a touch to go outside or try and find somebody in the middle of the box, Mark, he shoots first. Vermeer isn't expecting it, and really, really thin margins on both the angle for the pass and the angle for the shot in order for that play to get executed, and Johnny Football has his first goal of the 2021 season. Yarbrough stands on his head the rest of the way. Brenner had one really good chance, but for the most part, Mark, it was, you know, the Rapids are going to swallow up Brenner, and he's not going to get much chances. They are going to double team and surround Acosta anytime he has the ball. And it was, can Atanga, can Barreal finish off their chances? And as you alluded to, Mark, from the tone and the themes amongst the media, FC Cincinnati does what FC Cincinnati did what FC Cincinnati does. They don't finish their chances. The Rapids hold things out. Smash and grab, 2-0, job done. Mark, what was your good thing from this past Saturday's summiting of Mount Bailey?
I liked that final goal. It just looked really pretty, and it was such a tricky angle that Jonathan Lewis put it in at. He was just at, like, he was just moving very quickly and moving across the face of goal in such a way that I kind of was, like, really surprised that I looked at the play developing. I love the way Jack Price came at it. In fact, my brain tickled in that 72nd minute goal as I watched FC Cincinnati fall back in defense and Jack Price surge forward with the ball, and there was just nobody in front of him. And I think I said the words out loud in the press box. I think what I said out loud as the play was developing was, you cannot give him that much space, because then he slotted this lovely ball across to Jonathan Lewis. you know, kind of like center back post, center front post. And he dragged a ball, you know, across and out to the far post, past, Kevin Vermeer. And it was a beautiful goal. It was a slightly tricky angle for Lewis. But it was a really lovely assist from Jack Price. I just love that goal. It was great poetry. It honestly, I'm going to be blunt, it wasn't even necessary. It's kind of weird that a goal at like the 72nd minute felt like a second goal felt like a nail in the coffin. But after the conversations I had in the bars, in Cincinnati before the game, there was this pervading sense that like one goal against FCC probably stands up, which is kind of embarrassing, you know? The reality was, like, they took a lot of really good shots. They had a lot of really good chances. It shouldn't have held up. So I guess the second-ish good thing I would say is that the defense really held up. Matt, what was your good thing?
William Yarbrough, man of the match. You know, he's had several really good performances. I don't think that has necessarily shown it in terms of him having to make excellent saves, mostly because, you know, as I mentioned, Mark, in my article on the Substack on Danny Wilson. Listeners, if you're not subscribed to the Substack, if you haven't gone over to holdingthehighline.substack.com, Mark had a really great article this past week for Backpass, looking at youth soccer and a couple key players, three of whom are relevant to Rapids fans, and I obviously dropped my, what I feel, Mark, would be worthy of like an athletic player feature in the athletic soccer department, on Danny Wilson and his transformation through the Colorado Rapids. And one of those elements of that and elements of the improvement of the team as a whole has been Yarbrough and Wilson to an extent quarterbacking the defensive system. If the team has a good game, by definition, that does not look like Yarbrough having to make saves in volume or saves in terms of high quality. I don't know. It just so happened, Mark, kind of the way that it happened, and maybe the Rapids were playing the score a little bit. We'll get to this later with my big and my bad thing as well. But I thought they set themselves up to, by definition, absorb pressure. And fortunately, unlike the game against LAFC, where they did a similar setup in a similar shape with similar personnel, FC Cincinnati don't have Carlos Vela and Diego Rossi, making things a lot easier in terms of dealing with that. But I thought the emergency defending was good. I still kind of had an issue that they relied so much on bending a lot but not actually breaking. But Yarbrough stood on his head, and the fact that he did that after the supported knee injury, where I'm like, he's holding his hands over his head. It looks like it could be a serious injury. What does this mean for the season? Clint Irwin's going to have to be the starter long term. How long has it been since he played like the same thing that like Sounders fans, Mark, probably went through a month ago when Stefan Fry went down before Austin Cleveland has elevated himself. I'm going through in my head, and it's like, okay, Yarbrough's staying in the game. That's interesting. And then immediately has to make a couple saves. And like 15 minutes later, he makes that save against Barreal, and it's like, okay, must have just been a stinger. He's fine. And Lewis and Frazier both said afterwards, you know, probably his best performance as a member of the Colorado Rapids. And when he was able to stay in the game, that like lifted the spirits. That was like, okay, everybody else, come on. Like, let's pick it up so that we don't have to rely on him as much. He had to make two really good saves the rest in the way, but I thought that was the, ironically, given the timing of the goals and who the goals came from and how the goals were scored, Mark, I would almost say Yarbrough's staying in the match was the inflection point for the Rapids emotionally, or maybe was the moment of the match of just he's staying here. It's like, you know, like, come on, boys, let's get this done kind of a thing. And then in that, one of the ways that manifested itself, Mark, was Jack Price has had a lot of really gritty games in the English Championship, Mark. I know you are not a fan of the English second division in the way that I am, given Fulham's history and where they have played in the past, but like, this, like, Jack Price in the matter of 90 minutes went from guy FC Cincinnati fans have probably never heard of and don't think about to immediate WWE heel, where, you know, he has the hard tackle on Acosta that he gets a yellow card for. You know, he wins the ball. I think it could have been just a regular tackle. Toledo gonna Toledo, folks. He gets shoved down by Joe Zhao, I think it was, you know, in the shoulder. He has to get evaluated for concussion protocol. That's the protocol. Jack Price can't say, no, let me back in the game or anything. The crowd's upset, thinks that he's time-wasting with the Rapids up a goal in the first half, no less, and everything. So they start booing him and everything, and he leans into that with his physicality. Kellen Acosta, I don't think, had a particularly good game, but that yellow card in the 24th minute almost, like, lit a fire under him. And once Toledo decided to Toledo the game, the Rapids played within those boundaries where nobody was going to get a second yellow, nobody was going to get a straight red card. And it's like the more we get into this S-housery and this chicken S stuff and everything, the more frustrated Cincinnati's going to be. Knowing who they are and know their failings are, let's play into their greatest weaknesses. Let's then allow our center backs to do what they've been doing, what they've proven they can do, what Austin Trustee's proven that he can do, what Danny Wilson, as I wrote in my Substack article, he can do, and William Yarbrough's okay, he can make a big save when we need to, and let's just, they played into all of the, if you had to come up with the, how are we as a team from a style of play and from a narrative and from a between the whistles kind of a thing, what are we going to do to put to help FC Cincinnati dig themselves deeper into the hole that they've already dug for themselves in individual games in the season? That is how you would do it. And in that, Mark, you know, Jack Rice, who has never played a game in CONCACAF, isn't going to get called up for the English national team anytime soon. He straight up CONCACAF'd the Bailey. William Yarbrough did the exact same thing, and, you know, it wasn't pretty at times. I still have some reservations about the 3-5-2 and what Robin wants that to look like and what it did look like, how many open opportunities that they were, but given the opponent, they could get away with it, and they played into it, and I thought it was spectacular. Mark, let's get into some stats things as you might want to. What's your bad thing from this past Saturday?
One could make the argument that once you go up 1-0 on the road, that ceding possession and bunkering in is almost natural. And I think that that's to some degree true. Like, I kind of looked at the way the Rapids were playing and was like, well, of course they're going to play that way. That kind of makes sense on the road in a big game where the crowd is really behind your opponent. But they conceded 22 shots. You know, that's a lot of shots conceded. And there, but by the grace of how terrible FCC's finishing is, did they survive it? You know, you mentioned Alvaro Barreal. He had six shots. When's the last time? I don't remember the last time I saw a guy have six shots, and he only put one on target. The number of times he raced down the right side and put it over the bar was really stunning. It was, like, embarrassingly so. According to the expected goals numbers that this is, once again, a different website that may have a different metric in order to calculate how it comes up with expected goals. If you're a frequent listener to the show, folks, you'll know that American Soccer Analysis and MajorLeagueSoccer.com actually – MLSsoccer.com if you want to be pedantic, actually calculate expected goals differently. According to FB Ref, who also calculates expected goals, probably the way MLS does, he generated 0.6, Jurgen Locadia generated 0.6 expected goals on the two shots that he had. He had a shot that was absolutely like a must hit. That's so close. It's got to go in. And it didn't go in. He had a shot. His final shot, it wasn't as at that point, you know, everything was pretty much done. But it was in the 90th minute overtime from three yards away, and he missed. It was blocked. That's just not okay. You know, they missed some really, really close shots that they really shouldn't have. They had a couple shots, both in the first half and in the second half where there was a lot of goal to shoot at and they shot it right at Yarbrough's chest. And it was like, really? You had anywhere in the world to shoot it. Why did you shoot it there? So, you know, I honestly, thought to myself sometime around halftime, like, if we get out of here with a 1-1 or a 2-2 draw, I'd be okay with that. Like, I'd actually be okay with that. But Cincinnati, their finishing was awful. Brenner's finishing was awful. Barreal's finishing was awful. And that's what got us out of there. But, like, I didn't feel real good about that. That's my bad thing. How about you, Matt?
So I guess if we're comparing stats, Mark, since you obviously are more of the what is American Soccer Analysis saying, and I'm looking at the MLSsoccer.com numbers, they had FCC at a 2.1 expected goals and the Rapids at 0.04. And that chance that you're referring to, Mark, which I have at 3 minutes and 22 seconds into stoppage time for Jurgen Lokadia, MLSsoccer.com is saying that was a roughly an 86% chance of going in. This is where I think the models are a little incomplete, or at the very least, the numbers never lie, but they don't tell the full story. You know, yes, he was 3 yards out. Yarbrough was right there and slightly to Lakadia's right of the ball. And then I want to say it was Wilson or Drew Moore. There was another defender who was right there as well. So just taking into account to the distance from the goal, you're 3 yards from the goal, it's pretty hard to miss. If there's two guys immediately there and just the angle of like what is available to you from a net, and then how far do you have to, what angle do you have to hit the ball at to hit upper 90 on the far right corner and not have Yarbrough get a hand to it or a defender block it, or you completely miss the goal like Lakadia had been doing, is relatively low. So take that number with a grain of salt, folks, which accounted for almost half of FC Cincinnati's expected goals. I think to your point, Mark, it's kind of similar to the FC Dallas game, and then in the second half against Houston, the Rapids gradually started to play the scoreline rather than how things were going. So yes, FC Cincinnati poured it on, and understandably they were taking shots in high volumes with low quality opportunities or low quality chances of going in, probability of going it, is because they're chasing the game and you're just trying to, well, I need a shot to try and get a goal to try and get back into this game. And then that's where that kind of inflates the numbers. You know, there's a similar thing in hockey with the fancy stats community, Mark, with Corsi and Fenwick. And, you know, if a team's up 3-0 at the end of the first period, understandably, they're going to go to jump and chase, crudely the hockey equivalent of counterattack and parking the bus and everything. The opponent's going to get a lot of shots, but they're just going to be trying shooting anytime there's a shooting opportunity, not necessarily creating quality opportunities naturally if it was an even scoreline. So in that regard, I think that's, you know, that's well taken, but understandable. Lalas Abubakar was a bit of a chaos merchant. He kind of has been that, Mark, but kind of the shackles were taken off where he has more free range to do that in a back three and a back five than he does in a back four, where he's one of two center backs and Keegan Rosenberry is usually a little bit further up the field. And I'm still concerned about the 5-3-2 spacing. Similar to the LAFC game, just the midfield was, with Cole Bassett having to be further up to help support the counterattack when Danny Wilson or somebody else sprays a ball to Barrios or to Vines, you know, that kind of, that stretches the midfield to where then Jack Price and Kellen Acosta kind of have to cover way too much ground for two people. And that has me concerned that the midfield's just a little bit too easy to play through. And in the past, I would say that the Rapids center backs haven't been good 1v1 defending or in tight spaces, or, you know, they make a mistake and then somebody's in on goal. They did a really good job of that against FC Cincinnati. They did a decent job given the situation against LAFC. They did a horrible job on the two plays that led to the two goals for LAFC. So I understand what it means in terms of their ability to play out of the back, in terms of their ability to play in transition. It's beneficial for a Jonathan Lewis, for a Sam Vines, Cole Bassett, Diego Rubio, Mikey Barrios, obviously. I'm still kind of concerned with the defensive posture of it and the spacing. Granted, these have been two games, two tough road games against one desperate team that was going to come at them, albeit with not a lot of venom, or, you know, the questions they were asking in the final third were going to be poor questions asked. And then LAFC were obviously up to date. Carlos Vela's best game of his season, Diego Rossi with two goals as well. So I'm not ready to, you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater with this system. They're still trying to implement it. There's still a couple things that I think they're trying to tweak. Danny Wilson mentioned that, like, they, in my conversation with him for the Substack piece, you know, we've been trying to implement it. We've added a few more nuances, but it's still kind of a work in progress. So if this is a secondary option, if this is a secondary setup that Frazier is saying, you know, we're going to deploy this in certain situations where we think it's advantageous, I'm okay with that as long as this doesn't become the norm, because I still think this team is at their best when they're on the front foot in the fluid 4-3-3. But if this is something that Robin sees value in, given he's got three quality center backs who now have proven that they can be really good 1v1 defenders, and anything that is going to give more opportunities for Michael Barrios with his run of form to go at back lines in space, I'm here for it in those certain situations. With that, Mark, anything else that we have to say? Any big things?
My big thing is really simple. Maybe the simplest thing, and it was a thing that I woke up to this morning. And I'll read one quote off of it. We're in third place. That's insane. If you look at MLSsoccer.com's website, they have a nice, very short written piece called 27 Takeaways, One Observation on Every MLS Team After Week 8. Here is Steve Zakuani's quote on the Colorado Rapids. Once again, the Rapids were outshot and outpossessed. They're so clinical right now that it doesn't matter. They're in really great form, and I get the sense they could still get better. I've said it before, and I'll say it now. It's time to take them very seriously as a title contender. I know Matt makes a face and kind of like rolls his eyes and like goes, whoa, I don't know about that. But like,
wait, Mark, is that you saying that? Who wrote that? Who you are reading that from?
Former MLS player for Steve Zakuani.
Okay.
You know, this is a man who knows soccer a little bit.
All right.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely am hashtag slow your roll. That definitely feels a little bit premature, but it also feels a little bit overly like, Rapids duck and cover, Roger Bennett, not in the face kind of, protectiveness to say to ourselves, like, we should, you know, not get excited about this team. Like, third place is a big deal. And to be honest, they're technically in second place if you go on points per game instead of total points. So, we're playing very well. Yes, we've, and I said this at the very beginning of our season, we've been rolling through the chum of the league. You know, we've been beating up on the FC Dallases and the FC Cincinnati's. It's a lot easier to say that than to take on LAFC twice, Seattle twice, and we have yet to play the LA Galaxy at all, and they've been really rolling this season. You know, we've missed playing some of the best teams in the league so far. So we definitely should temper expectation, but I don't think he's wrong, Zakuani, here, in that, like, I wouldn't say take them seriously as a title contender. I would say that you should take the Colorado Rapids seriously. There are no teams in this league who are going to take this team for granted anymore. That also means we're going to have a little bit of a mark on our back, but, you know, the team is doing very well. It's time to start feeling, good about where Colorado is, that they did what they wanted to do, which was not change too much after last season, continue to build on the success of the previous season and say, these guys can do more. Matt, what's your big thing?
I said it previously. I kind of rolled into it, Mark, but Robin Fraser's got a second look and a set in formation where the Rapids can do some similar things to their principles of play, but also different in certain situations where they think it's advantageous. It is a work in progress, but it's yielded, you know, an almost draw at LAFC, and it's yielded a win at FC Cincinnati. The other big thing that I'll say, Mark, and I'm totally ripping this off, plagiarizing this from Jason Maxwell, who is quoting the Rapids, I guess we can call this a Rapids meme, the Mark Bodmer line, as you're familiar with it, Mark, the points per game the Rapids need to barely make the playoffs, and based on recent form in the Western Conference, right now with the Rapids getting 16 points from 8 games played, they need just 1.08 points per game the rest of the way in order to make the playoffs. Were this the Western Conference of yesteryear, and just to get the 7th seed in order to make the playoffs. So the Rapids not at 2 points per game, folks, is a supporter shield contending pace. And then 1.08 points per game, you are in serious conversation for the Anthony Precourt Memorial Trophy, which Mark took a picture with this past Saturday. So I agree with you, Mark. The Rapids are being taken seriously. If we're taking the bare minimum level of success, is just get back to the playoffs and have a performance where you don't get shellacked 3-0 on the road and everything. The Rapids are at that point where that is the basement expectation. At this point, failing to make the playoffs is a serious failure and warrants understanding of what went wrong in the coming 26 games to be played. But with that, Mark, shall we get on to Wednesday's nice clash against Sporting Kansas City?
I would be more than happy to discuss another sporting event that we are engaged in actively as Rapids commentators and fans.
Listeners, the Colorado Rapids are currently 8-34th through their 2021 regular season. That reduces down to 4-17th. As Mark and I just mentioned, they find themselves third in the Western Conference. They have 16 points from 8 games played, a record of 5 wins, 2 losses, and 1 draw. They have a plus-minus of positive 6, and away from the Dick this year, they are 2-1-1. They will be taking on Sporting Kansas City at 6:30 p.m. Mountain Time on Wednesday, the 23rd 3rd of June. Sporting Kansas City find themselves in 2nd in the West, 17 points off of 10 games played. So that's where, as Mark was mentioning, the Rapids are technically 2nd in points per game in the West, behind only the 1st place Seattle Sounders. So SKC, 17 points from their 10 games played. They have a record of 5 wins, 3 losses, and 2 draws, and a plus-minus of positive 4 at Children's Mercy Park. They are undefeated in 2021 with 3 wins and 2 draws. Mark, Sporting Kansas City has had a rough couple weeks based on, you know, for a team that supposedly is in 2nd in the Western Conference. They lost 2-1 against Portland Timbers the other day, and they've had a couple kind of wonky games recently at home against Austin FC, the most recent of those being a 1-1 draw. So SKC had, you know, has had 2 games now since the international break, and obviously they'll be playing in the middle of a double game week, folks. So Sporting Kansas City has a game on Wednesday against the Rapids, then they have a weekend game. The Rapids don't have any game this weekend, so it's all out, and then 10-day break before we welcome the Sounders for the 4th of July match. Not too many lineup changes, Mark. Alan Pulido is their big striker up top. Daniel Shallowy, Johnny Russell, you know, a real kind of supporting cast that you have from the front three. Gianluca Busio has been the one making headlines as a number 8, number 6, but he's also kind of been a number 10. He has some really interesting roles, kind of the foil, if you will, to what Cole Bassett has been for the last couple of years, has been Gianluca Busio, and it's looking like increasingly a deal could be done for him this month, or excuse me, July, in terms of international opportunities. They haven't really figured it out at center back, Mark. The hashtag sporting fit staunch defense that was normally of the past with the Graham Zusis and the Aiko Paras and the Matt Beaslers is no more. Elias Sanchez has been filling in at center back, though he's been normally a number 6 for them. And then Fontas has been their one stalwart at center back, but none of the really, you know, they got rid of Ike a couple years ago. They've made a couple signings to try and replace him. None of those have really worked out. And given how well Matt Beisler has looked in all those road games for Austin, they're not looking great at the center back role, though they still, Tim Melia is back from his injury and everything, so they're okay from a goalkeeper standpoint. Mark, dangerous team that plays really, really well at home. They haven't necessarily gotten the results, granted, against good opposition. The Rapids are coming in confident, but they've played weaker opposition than Sporting Kansas City has played. What do you make of this current SKC team? What do you make of Wednesday's match?
I think you said a lot of things really well. You know, you've got Gianluca Busio, you've got Daniel Shallowy, who is doing really well after a couple seasons ago just being absolutely incapable of hitting the broad side of the barn. You've got Alan Pulido, who's always a problem. So that's either a front three, or if they're going to play kind of like a 4-2-3-1 or something more like 4-4-2-ish, some guys who are going to come from wide and end up in the box and do some serious damage. But you said it really well. They score a lot of goals. They concede a lot of goals. They've got 17 goals for to lead the Western Conference. They've got 13 goals against, which is also dead last in the Western Conference in goals allowed, which that's a pretty shocking little thing there. That means that they are the second best team on record in the Western Conference, but they only have a 4-goal differential between goals for and goals against. The interesting thing, though, is their expected goals versus their expected goals against has a wider spread, meaning they should have scored slightly more goals than they actually are. Their expected goals against is roughly the same as you would expect it. So they've been a little bit unlucky in terms of their finishing, which is a bit surprising considering they're doing very well. The end of the story is it's a bit of a clash of the Titans. I'm not really as concerned about their last two results, being that Portland is always a really difficult out, and Austin, the game before that they drew, is a tremendous team and has been really, really good this season. Despite the fact they currently sit 10th, they haven't been getting results. They're really, really looking like a stalwart, dangerous, tough team. They're just going to have to kind of work through the struggles they've had. They haven't had a win in 5 games. It was 6 games ago the last time they won. But we're not here to talk about Austin. We're here to talk about Sporting. The last thing I'll say about them is, this is right now a clash of the Titans. You're looking at the second best team and the third best team in the Western Conference. This is one of those weird situations where you've got two teams that are kind of like medium small markets, and that the pundits at the beginning of the season had a lot of good things to say about Sporting. They had less good things to say about the Rapids. It's one of those weird games where, you know, the MLS headquarters guys are probably kind of irritated that it's such a great matchup, because it's the kind of great matchup that you'd like to promote, that like you'd like to get John Strong and Rob Stone and other, you know, big media names to kind of like scream about and say like, hey guys, this is a great game, you should all watch it. But the reality is, it's not really going to be the kind of game that most neutrals are going to tune into. It's going to take a few weeks, Matt, until you know, the MLS neutrals on the East Coast and on the West Coast get wise and realize that it's really poppin' in the center of the country, and us corn-fed, wind-swept, strange middle-of-the-country time zones are really good places to watch soccer matches. You got any other thoughts other than the really wonderful run-up you did? I love when you do a run-up, Matt, and you kind of, like, wrap everything, and I just tick down in my brain, and I go, well, can't talk about that. Nope, can't talk about that either. Nope.
I preface everything for you, Mark, and then you can choose to run with what you want. I hit all, here's the facts and everything, and then now I leave it to the more pundit talking head person, as opposed to who's the guy on ESPN FC whose name, I'm more of the co-host, I'm more of the weeby type, in that I am organizing the show and making sure that the flow is good, and then also providing opinion. And then you are the Matt Doyle, where it's just I preface all the stuff that you need to know, Mark, and then I give it to you and you talk about what you want to talk about. No, but I think your points are well taken. I think these next two games are going to be a fantastic barometer of where we're at as a club. I think the Rapids have shown against inferior opposition they can win in games that are close games but are at home. They can make adjustments and everything. What can they do when they go up against a team that has a more experienced head coach, is spending a little bit more money, and that has better ideas about who they are tactically? We're going to see that with Peter Vermes and Sporting Kansas City on the road on Wednesday, and we're going to see that in the next game, which is going to be 4th of July at home against Seattle Sounders, you know, who, you know, despite it being a 2-1 game, Mark, against the LA Galaxy, dominated that game from what I saw, despite LA having a lot of the ball and Seattle having to rotate some of their guys. You know, they're doing all of that without Nico Lodero. They're now going to be doing it without potentially Raul Ruiz Diaz. Stefan Fry has been missing. They've had to rotate some center backs and everything. So the next two games are going to be against the team in second in the Western Conference and the team in first in the Western Conference that currently is leading the Supporters Shield race. We're going to have a much better idea about whether or not this team can be a dark horse or a potential MLS Cup party crasher in the next 10 days than we have just them feasting on the minnows. That, you know, the narrative that I've had, Mark, about my predictions and my expectations for games is playoff team, road game at Dallas, you should expect to get that. You know, FC Dallas, Houston Dynamo, tough game. One of them had, you know, a DGW coming in pragmatic. A playoff team would win this. A team going to FC Cincinnati, struggling team, yes, a tough environment, sold out crowd and everything, a playoff team would go there and get at least a point. A playoff team, I think, you know, if the Rapids minimum want to be a playoff team, I think it's probably a win and a loss, or like two draws out of the next two games. I think the question is, could they get a draw? Could they get 4 points out of the available six? Then at that point, I think we're having a different conversation. At that point, Steve Zakuani needs to write you said they need to be taken seriously. If they get 4 points from the next two games, then I think we need to officially say we need to take them seriously as an MLS Cup dark horse, or at the very least, they're going to be a giant slayer come November, I think is the narrative that we'll have around that. Alan Pulido is still a very, very good striker, Mark. You know, the Rapids have done a really good job singling out center forwards for the opposing team. We saw them do it against Brenner. They've done it twice against Frank O'Hara. They have done it to Lucas Cavallini of the Vancouver Whitecaps. Alan Pulido is better than any of the center forwards that the Rapids have faced so far this season. That's going to be a really tough test. And whereas they can maybe give open looks to certain wide players for FC Dallas, they can't necessarily do that more, you know, Daniel Shallowy notwithstanding here, Mark. I wouldn't do that to Ja'Kari Shellen, and I would not give those opportunities to Johnny Russell. So it's a give Alan Pulido nothing, and then don't give anything good to the opposing wide roles, wide players. And I think if they're able to move the ball around, if they're able to do stuff in transition, I think this back line can be had, Jalen Lindsay notwithstanding. And ultimately, I think the battle might ultimately come down to who's able to boss the midfield more. Does Ilya Sanchez move into the six and then Gianluca Busio become more of an eight? We saw Busio have a very good performance in this fixture last year after the bubble tournament. I think it was a 1-1 draw, if I'm not mistaken. You know, Kolbasa didn't have a super great game against Cincinnati. Can he boss the midfield? Can Acosta and Price, control more? Can they dictate more what's happening rather than react to what's happening? They reacted too much. They weren't on the front foot in the midfield against FC Cincinnati. If they can do that, I think the Rapids will be on the front foot in that regard, and they're going to be able to create chances. I think for them, it's about who wins the battle in the midfield, and then that then puts the onus on whichever team loses the battle in the midfield. The onus is put on their back line to hold serve and everything. I think the Rapids are slightly better equipped to hold back Sporting Kansas City's attack than I would say the opposite for Sporting Kansas City's defense. But I think SKC is in a better position to win the battle in the midfield. But Mark, maybe that just means Robin comes out in the 5-3-2, get the ball to Michael Barrios, counterattack, set pieces, nick a goal, and then hold on for a result, which I wouldn't be surprised. I'll take a 1-1 draw on this. Rabbi, what you got?
Oh, I don't have much more to add. I definitely think that that it's an away game. I don't think you really it's a midweek game, and so I really do think that you are playing kind of they may want to do some squad rotation, and they may want to, especially considering a number of their important players have played some international matches or at least been in international camp. So we're getting into the time of the season where tiredness is a factor, and you know this, Matt. We are looking right now at the belly of the beast of the season. This upcoming stretch, I don't know if you said it this way. I know you said that it was a midweek game, but I'm just going to call it out even more specifically. It's Wednesday, Sunday, Wednesday, Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday for the next couple games. I mean, this is absolutely the meat grinder, the beginning of the meat grinder portion of our season, folks. So it's important to rotate the squad. And it's important to also be realistic, which means in a away game to Sporting KC, you can play for a 1-1 draw there, and that's totally respectable. So I'll just add, though, the Rapids have not been shut out since the first game of the season. They scored 3 goals in 4 matches. So it's getting to be ridiculous that we now think to ourselves, like, expecting the Rapids to only score 1 goal like we used to back in the old days is real pessimism. Only scoring 1 goal is pessimism? That's crazy. So I'm going to take this game as a 1-1 draw, but I do definitely feel like I'm being conservative in saying they're only going to get a goal, and that feels crazy pants.
Let's move on to Ask HCHL, Mark. The final email question that we have from David Malenfant from a couple weeks ago. David, thank you for the email. We've broken it up, and it's added to the end of the show. And so this is, ironically, Mark, the first question that he asked chronologically in his email. But I guess we can – the question is now more relevant given the recent results, I would say, and given the tactical nuance that we've seen. In any case, are we at a stage as fans where we should be fully invested – in the idea of, quote, in Robin we trust, end quote? Meaning, while I think Robin got it wrong against LAFC, do you generally have faith in his tactics, man management, and leadership abilities? Subsequently, same question applies to Pork. Mark, I've addressed this previously on Pork. I think he's learned from a lot of his mistakes from the signings that he's made in the past. I think he has done a good job in his own thought process and also building out the analytics department, hiring good people around him. Brian Crookham's doing great stuff from the academy standpoint. They are pumping out homegrowns every single time they do something in the draft. The question is always, are they up to something? They're usually up to something. It's usually been something that's been good. And they've done a good job in terms of making domestic signings. And I think going back, we can say going into last year, there's no real, other than Nicholas Benese being, a decent budget player and coming off the bench, I wouldn't say there's any bad, there's no Skelton Gashi contract on this roster right now. There's nobody like, oh my god, how are they going to try and offload this guy to try and add somebody? Porik's learned from his mistakes, folks. If Porik's doing something to move up in the draft, I trust him. If we're getting rumblings about a potential homegrown signing, I trust Brian Crookham. If they make a move for a distressed young American international who's not getting playing time, or somebody out of one of the lesser-known European leagues, I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt in the ways that I was not after 2017. Mark, your thoughts on the Robin Fraser aspect of David's question?
I will, and I'll agree with you 100%, and I'll just say it one, just to add to Matt's point really nicely. When a strange move that I don't fully understand happens in MLS these days, with the Colorado Rapids, I look at it and I go, like, Jurassic Park, ah, clever girl. You know, I feel like Porik is up to something. You know, there's a GAM trade or a move to get rid of an international slot that we don't need and we get $200,000 in TAM off it. I think, oh, that's clever. He's up to something. Parenthetically and by parallel, if Nelson Rodriguez at Chicago Fire makes the exact same move, I assume that somebody else in MLS has fleeced the pants off of him. Because whatever they do over the Chicago Fire, they make moves, and I look at him and I go, nobody in the world knows what the hell they're doing. And 6 months later, you look back and you go, yeah, they didn't know what the hell they were doing either. With Porik, it usually works out.
They got the new rebrand right, though, in Chicago. They got that going for them, even though they can't win games.
Yes, but it's damning by faint praise to say that after they got the rebrand completely wrong last year, they got it a little bit less wrong this time around. They got it more right this time. So, yeah, you shouldn't say we're so proud of the team that got the rebrand right this time, because you have to say that they got it wrong so badly the first time. To Robin, I agree. I still feel like the sample size is kind of a question. Like, I think one thing that was really interesting is I was up in the press box talking to the Cincinnati guys, and I was saying, oh yeah, we're going to line up, you know, probably. He asked, one of the Cincinnati Soccer Talk guys asked me, you know, what's the tactics like? How do they roll out? What's the usual formation? I'm like, well, it's basically 4-3-3. And then, of course, the Rapids hit the field with a 3-5-2. And I'm like, damn it, they make me look like an idiot. And I had said to the guy, you know, the last time we rolled out in a 3-5-2 was against LAFC. I think it was by necessity, and it didn't work. It didn't look good. And then they played in a 3-5-2 this game, and I just kept going like, why is this working? I don't know why this is working, but it's working. I kind of want to go back and watch this whole game again, because, of course, when you sit up in the press box, and also I was shooting photography for the first half, so my angle on the game was very strange. I also want to point out, like, I got to watch little moments. One of the wonderful things about being doing photography at a game instead of being in the press box is you're not seeing the broad strokes. You're seeing very small details, little moments, like the S-housery of Jack Price, or, you know, just like a really, really clever, beautiful dribble or a wonderful reception. And I was mostly on the left side, so I got to see a lot of really nice stuff. But the point being, like, that was a really interesting game this last week where they came out in a formation and with a game plan that I did not expect, and it really, really worked very well. And that's a kind of a Robin Fraser calling card. I think we're still, as media, Matt and I are both still trying to figure out, like, what makes Robin tick and, like, what's the genius behind these moves. He keeps his cards very close to his chest. He's very, very straightforward post game. I mean, I went to the Cincinnati post game because it was my first opportunity to be in person. The Rapids are still holding their post game pressers only over Zoom. They're not letting human beings in. Hopefully, God willing for you, Matt, that changes. So I just honestly, I wanted to see what the press room looked like at FCC. So I got to listen to Yob Stomp and just kind of experience him. He was very honest. He was very, very honest about, but maybe even in a bad way. He was basically saying, like, yeah, we're still developing. You win some, you lose some. The Rapids were very good. I'm very proud of this team. There's a lot of answers where you're like, I don't know if you're going to still have your job in 6 months. But I appreciate that you're being, you know, he was very positive. And I think they're mostly fed up with positivity in Cincinnati. But it was much more open and unguarded than Frasier. I think, you know, Matt and I are both still trying to figure out when we talk about what makes Robin Frasier a very good coach in MLS, which is absolutely undoubtable. Like, he is definitely a very good coach in MLS. But what's keeping us from being able to say as writers or as podcasters that he is truly great is not anything that we see. It's what we don't know, because we don't fully understand the man and we don't fully understand the decisions that he makes. I think Matt's nodded his head a lot here, and it's really interesting to kind of note that, like, I'm being very honest here. I don't know that when I started to answer this question, I intended to be this honest, but, like, I kind of want to fall in love with Robin Frasier and invest fully, but I can't because I don't really know what makes him tick, and I don't know exactly why he does some of the things that he does.
He's got some Bruce Arena, Bill Belichick in him when it comes to, I think, some of his man management, Mark, and also how he interacts with the media. And I think I've mentioned this before, and I've spoken to a few other people, you know, in the media, and then also from the PR team as well. Like, you know, Pablo gets the job, and you make a – you know, anytime there's a new head coach, someone in our position, Mark, makes a really big deal of, I want to go to training on at least a weekly basis. How do they operate around their players? How do they run a training and everything? Also, what are they doing from a media standpoint? You know, every single time I usually try to go to – back when we were allowed to – you know, they've just opened up to where I can physically go to training if I want. There's no in-person media. So if I want to go there to see, you know, is Lawless fully participating in training? What's Court 4 doing? That still has value. But kind of the, you know, I made a big deal, Mark, every single time I was there for the first day of regular training, you know, whoever the media person was, you know, going back several comms directors and everything, they'd go through and they'd introduce me to every single new person. So Robin gets appointed midseason. I'm there for his opening press conference. I'm there for his first training where he has media availability afterwards. I'm trying to get to know him and everything. Last season happens the way that it does. We're doing everything virtually. Much of that last year was with Robin wearing a mask. As you mentioned, he's not particularly expressive from a nonverbal communication standpoint. That we haven't ever had cross video to where he's seeing video of us, so all he's hearing is us. He's not seeing us. There's not a chance for us to make eye contact to the extent that we can through the video lens and everything, or facial expressions or anything. And, you know, last year was an up and down season and everything. He had to be defensive about the team. At times that was valid. At times people asked questions that they thought were valid and critical, and he came out as a little bit punchy and everything. So it's kind of, I'm trying to work with somebody where the median hasn't allowed us to properly have that relationship, and someone who I'm not sure particularly cares, or at least hasn't made a full investment in the ways that, you know, say what you will of Anthony Hudson, folks, Mark, he made a really big deal about trying to get to know us and trying to have that relationship and everything so that we could have a rapport, so that when we had those tough questions, we could actually have a little bit of a back and forth and get a better understanding rather than just be defensive. And I think the median and maybe some of the ways that Robin initially was, and then just where the club's been at times, hasn't necessarily allowed for that. That being said, as I spoke with him when I asked him, when I was interviewing him for the Danny Wilson piece, I asked a general broad question about center backs and everything. You look at Lawless has played better under him. Danny Wilson obviously has massively improved under him. Look at how Austin Trusty is playing. You know, Mark, find me a player under the age of 26 on this team right now who has not been improved by the last year and a half of being coached by him. So the man management's been good in terms of, does he, you know, the old saying, a good manager adds 20%, a bad manager takes away 20%. He's adding at least 10 to 15% on the quality of what his individual players are doing. He's added in tactical nuances that we've noticed, that we've seen Sam Vines as a completely different player. It's to the point where guys who previously weren't really considered in USMNT consideration are now flat out getting opportunities. Sam Vines is probably going to start the entire group stage at left back in the Gold Cup. Jonathan Lewis could work in the World Cup qualification. We could say same things for Kellen Acosta as well. If the U-20s actually qualified for the Olympics, Cole Bassett would probably be going to the Olympics as well. And he's been a part of that evolution. So everything that I can see on the field, I think, obviously suggests that we have a coach with a lot of really good assistant coaching experience who's in the process of figuring out who he is as a first team manager. There's been some learning experiences. There's been some mistakes, as we mentioned. On the whole, he's adjusted to them. There's been very few games where I can say he was both out coached in the initial game plan and in the adjustments through that. And he's gotten better and he hasn't stuck to mistakes. The one thing that I really kind of would hammer him for, Mark, would be the not starting Steven Bettischer in the playoff game and everything, and the fact that, you know, oh, well, we can't start, you know, it's unfair to have Beta's first game for the Rapids be a playoff game. At the same time, we're looking at here in late June, and Bettischer still has yet to make his Rapids debut. Is the immediate plan, like, is the backup plan for Sam Vines being unavailable, Kellen Acosta, given how many, you know, given how many, you know, monkey wrenches that throws into the midfield. But on a whole, he's made corrections, and he's made corrections on the scale of minutes in games or on the scale of weeks or even just individual games within a season that took Anthony Hudson months to actually establish and figure out, that probably took Pablo Mascherini, who was looking on the job, weeks if not months to actually realize what was going on. And in that, David, I think we are heading towards, we are heading towards a position where we can say in Robin we trust. Right now it's in Robin we invest time, and eventually that's going to feed in and be successful in the same way as Mark, that in his third season it wasn't looking good for Peter Vermees, and Sporting Kansas City chose to stick with him, and look at how that has turned out. Rabbi, tell our folks about our sponsors.
Our sponsors are Roughneck Scarves, who I usually don't lead off with. They make a wonderful custom-made neckwear and other sorts of things. They're great for supporters groups. They're wonderful for bachelor parties, gifts for your best man. It's wedding season, folks. I was downtown in Cincinnati. There were so many people out on the streets with the just marrieds and the cans dragging behind their cars, people taking horse-drawn carriage rides and proposing and so on. Why not make a custom-made proposal scarf for your beloved with Roughneck Scarves? And Icarus FC, they make fantastic and beautiful bespoke original jerseys and kits, all kinds of colors. They have templates that you can use in order to help design what you want on there, or you can design it basically from scratch yourself. That kind of customization is really wonderful and fantastic. Both of the products that I've just mentioned have that kind of variability. It's a really great thing. We're glad to have them as our sponsors because they put out a great product, just like we do, Matt. And some of the product we put out is in written form on our Substack. Some of it's on Twitter. Some of it's on Last Word on Soccer. And some of it is on American Soccer Analysis. Tell them a little bit more about it and how folks can reach out to us through the various intertubes if they need to.
Find all of our written stuff at all of the places that Mark just mentioned. As I mentioned, as I plugged previously, we both dropped really, really good articles on our Substack. You can view those on webpage form at holdingthehighline.substack.com, or you can subscribe to our newsletter. Additionally, if you want all of our content, all of the back passes and everything going forward, you can get that by becoming a subscribing Highliner for us on our Substack. Follow us individually on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi, at @LWSMattPollard. Follow the podcast on the socials at Rapids96Podcast. Send us your questions using the hashtag AskHDHL, or email us at Rapids96Podcast@gmail.com. If we bring further monetary value to your life, you can also head on over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/Rapids96Podcast or denverpost.com/HDHL. Listeners, we will see you next week as we preview Fourth Fest and the Colorado Rapids finally welcoming back a full capacity crowd at Dick's Sporting Goods Park.
Peace!